All right, welcome in, welcome in. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio here in College Park on 90.5. I am Jack Wynn, your host for the next 2 hours as you listen to Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV. It is a Tuesday at 2 o'clock, or at 12 o'clock, excuse me, which means we've got a lot of great content for you. We've had a big week in sports. It was a big weekend in the NBA playoffs. In golf, the NHL playoffs began a lot. The NFL draft is in 2 days, so we're going to talk a lot about that. We've got a great show for you today, a lot to get into. We'll get into it right after this.
Ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I can tell you about Leif Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American.
All right, welcome back. We're recommended to start shows with, you know, one of those kinds of messages, tell you what the station's about, what we endorse here in the Maryland community. But more important is what we endorse in the basketball community. Not actually, but for me. And we're going to start with the biggest game, in my opinion, from this past weekend, which was the Lakers over the Rockets. And we have to start with LeBron James, because what we saw from him this weekend was truly historic, and in my opinion, I would say unbelievable, but from what we've seen from LeBron throughout his career, I believed it. So, he comes into this game, 41 years old, in year 23, having played over 73,000 minutes, taking on a playoff team without his two best players, his two best teammates, Luka and Austin Reeves, both out, probably out for the remainder of the series, but we'll see if one of them makes an early return. And it was all up to LeBron. And what I think a lot of people expected to see, given that LeBron's the only, you know, viable option on the Lakers at the moment, is for him to be ball dominant. For him to go back to the way what we used to see, we get one more carry job out of him, you know, from the Cleveland days or the late Miami days, whatever it is. And instead, we got a LeBron that read the game perfectly, as he always has. What we expect and what LeBron thinks is the right thing to do is not always the same when it comes to basketball, because we don't understand the game as well as him. And one of the things that, in my opinion, makes him the greatest player ever, and, you know, maybe the second greatest player ever, depending on where you have him and Michael Jordan. But I never felt... When LeBron plays, you can tell that he understands what's happening on the court perfectly. He understands his team. He understands the other team. He knows the schematics. We've heard stories of him calling out other teams' plays. But the biggest thing is he knows what he needs to do to help his team. And last night was not a night where he needed to be ball dominant or where he needed to be the primary scorer and a volume shooter. He understood that he's going to get his guys going. He's going to play make. He's going to pass the ball. He's going to control the pace and the tempo of the game. And it worked wonders. And the Lakers were able to come out and get a big game one win. So after all this time, and seeing LeBron throughout his entire career do the same thing while still having the ability to be dominant and take over games, now that he's this old, he's still doing it. It's a testament to his IQ. He has gotten smarter as he's gotten older. That is the one thing that is paced well with LeBron that we have seen from him. He has one of the highest IQs in the history of the game, and the more that he sees, the more he understands how to play, where to have his teammates, to tell them to go stand in the corner, Are you going to run a screen and then cut down low? Where should you position yourself so that this other player can drive and your defender, who is specifically good at one thing, is out of the way? These are all things that he considers. It's incredibly advanced, and you see it play out as if it's poetry in motion on the court. So I was thrilled to see it. It was his 145th career double-double in the playoffs. That's third all-time, and it's just another accolade and another win that'll be added on to LeBron's career. And once again, by the way, the thing, LeBron is one of the greatest scorers ever, if not the greatest scorer ever. He has more points than anyone else, playoffs and regular season. But he has always valued playmaking first. And I think the thing that's the most impressive thing about LeBron is that even though he is a pass-first player, he can still score at high volumes. And even though he is such a dominant scorer, he still knows to prioritize his teammates and getting the rest of the team good shots over getting himself shots. And that's not something that you see very often with superstars. He is going to end his career with the most points ever and the second most assists ever. So, you know, hats off to LeBron for another incredible performance and the Lakers taking game one. For their chances the rest of the series, I think LeBron can play this exact style for the rest of the series. I mean, when he can play point guard. It reminds me very much of the style that Chris Paul played for most of his career. Be a great player, pass the ball. You don't need incredibly high box score numbers. You just need to make sure your team gets going and that the plays are happening the right way and that you're set on defense. He does that better than anybody. And so LeBron replicating this kind of Chris Paul-esque, you know, play style at this age, it kind of just shows that he's going to be able to keep playing at this level for as long as it takes. A lack of athleticism doesn't hurt his passing. And even as he gets older, he's going to continue to know the game better and be able to pass the ball just as well. So, at the very least for this series, you would be able to expect him to replicate this. Now, I do expect the Rockets to adjust. They are a good team and a good defensive team. I'm not sure Luke Kennard is going to give you the unbelievable shooting night that he did with the Lakers in Game 1. So, I expect LeBron to adjust, figure out what his team needs, and then change how he plays accordingly. We'll probably have a couple high-scoring volume nights. If Kevin Durant comes back, I would definitely expect LeBron to amp it up a little bit on the usage rate. One thing we also know about LeBron is he typically uses Game 1 as a feel-out game to try to understand his opponent better and then adjust for the rest of the series. But they got a jump start winning it, and now they're kind of in a power seat here for the rest of the series. So I would be interested to see how the Rockets adjust to this with or without Kevin Durant. For Houston, having KD back soon is of the utmost importance. You go from being one of the better teams in the league to being a team that is probably around play-in level without KD. They've certainly lacked some defense and some youth and athleticism, which is what they gave up to get Durant when they traded Jalen Green. So I think the Rockets have some moves to make this offseason, regardless of if they win the series or not. I don't think they're going to win the title. But KD not being there is just really, it just hurts. Because it forces a lot of these other role players and starters into a position where they're being relied and depended upon way more than they were at any other point in the regular season. And when you're on the road in the playoffs, these are young guys, that's not really a recipe for success. Which is something, by the way, that LeBron acknowledged and understood and exploited with the Lakers. We saw him yelling at his teammates during the huddle a lot, keeping everyone on the same page. There were a couple really cool shots of him communicating with his team without even talking and them just kind of understanding what he's trying to say about where they're supposed to be. So I think this will be a fun series. I do really want LeBron versus KD at some point, and I'm hoping that these guys come back. Still no word, by the way, on Luka or Austin Reeves. It's looking like they're going to be out for an extended period of time. despite some of the rumors that they may be back early. But I do think the Lakers... Here's the thing. I would think about changing my pick because I picked Houston to win the series in 7 games. But after seeing game one, there's no reason the Lakers can't win. I mean, LeBron, I don't know. I don't feel I have the right to change my pick after one game, so I'm going to stick with Houston. I'm going to assume Kevin Durant will be back, and then the script will start to change. But I did make that pick before I knew KD was out. And if I knew that was the case, I probably would have picked LA. So I guess I have to look at the rules and the bylaws of, when you're allowed to change your take. But for now, we'll roll with Houston, assuming Durant comes back. So the next person that we have to talk about, also, we discuss the all-time legendary great, who's likely on his last playoff run, who is still having historic moments. We are now going to flip it completely and talk about a future legend who's making his first playoff run, who also had a historic moment. So, the Spurs and Victor Wembanyama blew out the Portland Trail Blazers. And Wemby was unstoppable, quite literally unstoppable. And it was just so exciting to see, and it didn't surprise me at all. From everything we've seen from Wemby, from the way that he's handled the early stages of his career, the media, his off-season training, his injury recoveries, everything. The way he's stepped up in big moments, the way he hasn't been afraid of other teams. There was no reason to believe that he wasn't going to be awesome in his first playoff game, especially against a team that lacked the size to kind of do anything about it. I mean, he was matching up against Donovan Klingon, for goodness sake. What's he supposed to do against Victor Wembanyama? Wemby became the first player in NBA history to have 35 points on 5 3-pointers made in their playoff debut. Think about that again for a second. Victor Wembanyama, 7'5", shot-blocking, rebounding legend, had 35 points on 5 3-pointers. He shot 5 of 6 from 3. He is just the most unique talent that we have ever seen in basketball. At his size and his ability to handle the ball, to shoot from anywhere, he is unstoppable. And I was thrilled to get the full Wemby experience. Now, he was a little light on the blocks and rebounding for what we normally see from him, only 5 rebounds and 2 blocks. 2 blocks is still good, but, Wemby, we usually see higher numbers. Either way, an incredible output. Not to mention still being the best, remaining the best defender in the league. He won the Defensive Player of the Year award unanimously for a reason. We'll talk a little more about the significance of that later in the show. But there were so many times where the Blazers would have a fast break opportunity or would get a good look in a half-court set. And, Drew Holiday or Scoot Henderson or whoever it was would just dribble out of the paint. They would get a look, they would notice Wemby was by the hoop, and they would just be like, nah, not my shot. I'm going to go take this one back out. And it's a little hilarious to see play out because these are professional basketball players who get literally scared when they see a certain defender. But Wemby is so good that he warrants it. And it would be a bad shot if you take a layup and he's in the vicinity because there's a very good chance it's getting blocked. Or at the very least, you're going to have to alter your shot so much to the point where it's not a good look anymore. So having Wemby on your defense is such a premium. Having him on offense to catch lobs, to throw down to in the low post, and then just to let work on the perimeter as a 7'5", 3-point sniper. I mean, he is one of the 5 best players in the NBA right now. They're going to crush the series. I predicted a sweep. I have no reason to change that pick. And they're going to give some of these teams a real run for their money. I mean, the Thunder, they beat the Thunder in the regular season. The Nuggets, Wemby's not scared of Jokic. I think the Spurs got a real shot. I don't think they're going to win the title because this is their first real playoff run. This is Wemby's first playoff run. And in basketball, you kind of have to win in steps, where it's very rare throughout NBA history to see a team, you know, come together as a group and then win their first title push together. Usually you have to, you know, go on a small playoff run and then you lose, and then a deeper one and then you lose, and then, you know, you start contending. The Spurs absolutely are capable of winning a championship. I just don't think they will for that reason. I think there are too much nuance to the playoffs, too much to learn for such a young group. So we'll see. We'll see. I just want to keep seeing Wemby play at these high levels during the playoffs. All right, next. Nuggets Timberwolves. This one was a great game last night. This one was fun to watch. And even game one, really fun as well. Jamal Murray had a great game. Nikola Jokic with a triple-double. But the game last night felt like it switched the tides a little bit in the series. And these are two teams that are very competitive. They've met up in the playoffs before. They both have superstars. They both feel confident in their ability that they're going to... They both think they're going to win. They both think they're the better team. And the games get physical. They're both great defensively. It's exciting to see play out. But last night showed us that the Timberwolves culture is still able to prevail in tough situations. On the road in Denver, trailing in the fourth quarter, trailing for most of the game, and the Timberwolves as a team come through and win it. Anthony Edwards was amazing for most of the game. Through three quarters, he had 28 points, but he only had two in the fourth. It was the rest of the Timberwolves that really contributed. Dante DiVincenzo had an unbelievable fourth quarter. Rudy Gobert had played great defense in the fourth quarter. Even Julius Randle had a couple of good moments, including those last two free throws to ice it. So I think the Timberwolves are obviously very live. I think this is going to be probably the best first round series that we get in terms of entertainment, especially now that KD is out for the Lakers one. But last night was interesting because it was so intense and so back and forth, and neither of the superstars really contributed to it. As I just mentioned, for the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards was not the bus driver, was not the engine in the fourth quarter. Maybe he picked up too much defensive attention from Denver because they adjusted from what he was doing the first three quarters. That might be the case. But either way, the ball just wasn't really in his hands that much. For Denver, this was a failure. And we know that Minnesota has great defenders. We know that they're a tough team, as I mentioned. But Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray started the first 8 minutes of the fourth quarter 1-for-10 combined. The rest of the team had like 6 points up until then. And then you have 2 minutes left in the game and it's pretty much over. So you need your superstars to come through. Or at the very least, you need to be able to adjust to what the game is showing you. I opened the show talking about what makes LeBron so great was his ability to read a game, read his team, and figure out what they need. The Nuggets could not get out of their two-man set. They ran 4 straight minutes of gameplay doing Jokic and Murray two-man pick and rolls, inside-outside shots. It was just bad look after bad look. And even when they got good shots, they missed them terribly. At a certain point, you have to adjust. The Nuggets have good teammates. Aaron Gordon is a good player. They have got shooters. They don't need to just force the ball up. So it was a little frustrating to see, especially when we know that Nikola Jokic is such a smart player usually, but they just couldn't get it done in a big spot. And
credit to the Timberwolves for being able to exploit whatever it was the Nuggets were trying to throw at them, for stopping the Jokic-Murray two-man action, which seems to crush most other teams on the road in Denver. And now we head back to Minnesota. I did pick the Nuggets to win in seven. I'm standing by that pick. I do think it's going to go seven, and when they come back to Denver, I just think Jokic and Murray will get it done if they're in the spot again. But losing has consequences. And if they establish these kinds of habits, then maybe when that Game 7 comes, they won't be able to come through. Okay, we got two other quick games to talk about here in this opening segment of our show. And it's two teams that dropped one that they really shouldn't have. Starting with the Pistons, who lost Game 1 to the Magic. And I got to admit, I picked the Pistons to make a deep playoff run, but I was cheering for the Magic. I mean, that was so exciting. Shout out to Paolo Banchero. Shout out to Jalen Suggs, who both had incredible performances. Suggs got the energy going early. And once the Magic could really felt like they could compete with Detroit, because they went up by, I think, 14 early on, they were just going to play with confidence the rest of the way through. And that's exactly what they did. Not to mention, the Pistons could not move the basketball. They could not make shots. Cade Cunningham, for at least the entire second half, was really the only guy who was really doing anything for Detroit. And he was unstoppable. It's why they're still going to win the series. The Magic can't do anything with Cade, and eventually the Pistons team that won 60 games is going to come through and is going to, you know, look like the Pistons, and they're going to win the series. But good job for the Magic. This was a bit of a down year for them. They were a higher seed each of the last 2 years. They made the big trade for Desmond Bane this offseason, thinking that was going to take them over the top, and instead they regressed. But this is a culture win. This is a reminder that they're still competitors. Detroit cannot take them lightly. But they're going to have to figure something out with Cade Cunningham. Otherwise, they're going to be in real trouble. All right. Next up, we have to talk about the Knicks. And the game last night was unbelievable. So you have to shout out. I want to talk about Nickeil Alexander-Walker very briefly before we get into the actual game. He was the most improved player, or I expect him to win most improved player for a reason. He is somebody who spent the majority of his career, you know, kind of bouncing around from team to team. And now last night, he has a great performance again, had a really big steal late, and the Knicks just weren't able to get it done. So losing game one is not ideal for a team that I picked to make the finals. But, or game two, excuse me. But I do think that they'll be fine. Jalen Brunson is a great player. We trust them to close games. And those last few possessions were just really rough. OG Anunoby missing both free throws. You just can't do that in that kind of spot. But I don't really have much to talk about here. I don't think what the Hawks did is sustainable. I think that they're going to head to Atlanta. They'll probably play with confidence, but I just think that the Knicks are the better team. I think they're still going to win. I think I predicted five games. So, you know, there's the one. I'm 50% correct, you know. The Knicks can't win in five if the Hawks don't win one. So I'm halfway there on my prediction. Now the Knicks just need to win the next three. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're almost halfway through the first hour of our show. And when we come back, we are talking about the NFL. With you after this.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with best buddies, branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at bestbuddiesumb.
Care to Stop Violence is a campus resource housed in UMD's University Health Center. The care office provides free, confidential advocacy and therapy services for survivors of sexual assault, relationship violence, stalking, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their supporters can make an appointment with a trained advocate or call our 24/7 hot crisis line to speak to someone right away. Additionally, we work to empower the campus community to prevent power-based violence through educational presentations, events, and outreach activities. Learn more about our available services and programs by visiting health.umd.edu/care.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
While you're outside exercising in the sun and fresh air, make sure to check yourself for ticks after being in woodsy areas like the Paint Branch Trail. Tick bites can cause a serious illness called Lyme disease, which is highly preventable and treatable if caught early. Maryland is in the top 15 states with the highest number of reported Lyme disease cases. The best way to deal with this illness is to prevent it, so avoid going off trail into the woods. And if you have to, make sure to check yourself afterwards for ticks or signs of bites, which usually appear as red bullseyes. If you feel any potential Lyme disease symptoms, like a rash, fever, joint pain, or muscle aches, immediately go to the University Health Center. Don't let this stop you from enjoying the great outdoors. Just be alert when you're outside and prevent this infection.
All right, welcome back in. So we started our show talking about the NBA playoffs from this past weekend. There were a lot of really awesome games, a lot of really great series the rest of the way. But now we're going to switch the topic to something that truly broke my heart from this past week in sports as a Giants fan. Because All-Pro and superstar defensive lineman Dexter Lawrence was officially traded to the Cincinnati Bengals in exchange for the 10th overall pick. And I didn't really expect the trade to happen at first. When he demanded the trade, I thought that it was a tactic to bring Harbaugh to the negotiating table, because I had assumed that he had come in and hadn't prioritized it. But instead, it seems as if this was a storyline that had gone on for multiple years. Lawrence wanted a more established or high-paying contract than what he was getting, which he's deserved for the last couple of years, but, you know, he did regress slightly this past season. Granted, his regression still makes him a top five defensive lineman in the league, but you can't have a down year and then ask for, you know, top end money. But the point is, he's still a great player. I still think he's the best interior defensive lineman at the very least, and he deserves to be paid. But you need to then come to the negotiating table, because all the reports that are coming out say that the Giants had reached out to him. Dexter Lawrence said that he wanted a contract, but he never really gave exact numbers, and the Giants were never able to get a structure going. He didn't tell them how many years he wanted. He didn't tell them exactly how much money he wanted. It just kind of fell apart, and now it's apparent that he just wanted out of New York. He wanted to be off the team, and he wanted to be traded. So I say, okay, goodbye. go have fun in Cincinnati, a team that's famously cheap, a team that's known, you know, not exactly for their history of success and smart ownership. But he's happy he got his one-year extension, and the Giants in exchange have two top 10 picks for this upcoming draft. So, you know, pretty win-win for both teams. Good for them. But we're going to dive into this a little more. For the Bengals, this is obviously a huge acquisition. Dexter Lawrence is better than anybody they were going to draft with the 10th pick. And for a Bengals team that is every season trying to compete for a Super Bowl, that is something that you can afford to prioritize. Having that great player at his peak right at the start of this year's run. He's going to replace probably Trey Hendrickson's production because they lost him in free agency. And now they still have another strong defensive lineman. But once again, I don't understand what Cincinnati's doing exactly. I get wanting to make the run, acquire the superstar, go all in. But the Bengals are known for poor financial management in the cap space with their other players. Around half of the Bengals cap space is being taken up by four players. Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, and now Dexter Lawrence. So it is just not a healthy way to run a team. You have other players that you need. You have other positions that you need to fill. And just spending on a couple of superstars is not what wins teams Super Bowls. And as we watch the Bengals this year, we're once again going to notice deficiencies in the offensive line. They're not really going to have an effective running game. The defense, at least the secondary, is going to have problems, like we see from the Bengals every year. If they stay healthy and they make a run, that's great. And you can hope that the offense can just keep up with whoever it is you're playing. And maybe Dexie can make a big play the way Chris Jones used to for the Chiefs. But that's such a small path forwards to winning, and or a narrow path forwards. I just don't see it working out for them. I'm glad Dex got his money. The Bengals seem to now have that kind of reinforcement on defense, but that team as a whole is not ready to compete. They have too many holes to fill. But it'll be a fun team. All right, on the flip side, let's talk about the Giants. So, although in the very short interim, this team is going to get worse because Dexter Lawrence on the defensive line has so much gravity. Dexter Lawrence was a 3-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro, and he was by far the best nose tackle and interior defensive lineman in the league. When you look at the statistics of the nose tackles, the guys who lined up over the center, he has over 100 pressures over the last couple of years from that spot. The next highest is Vita Vea, who's in the low 30s. That's like over triple. His dominance at his position is unmatched at this point. And losing that is going to hurt. All of a sudden, you know, you're not going to have somebody clogging the middle of the line with double and triple teams. You're going to have to work out some new kinks and ways for, you know, Abdul Carter and Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau to get through. But they do still clearly have a lot of talent. They still have 3 first rounders on that defensive line. And now they have 2 top 10 draft picks to go back and improve this defense further. So the Giants have a lot of options now. Not to mention, they're going to have extra money from not paying Dex to then give to some of these other guys. The trade makes it less likely, apparently, that a player like Kayvon Thibodeau would get traded because, you know, you can't really overwhelm yourself with edge rushers. So what do the Giants do now? Because they pick at 5 and they pick at 10. And the last time that they had 2 top 10 picks, they took Evan Neal at 5 and Kayvon at 7. Kayvon at 5 and Evan Neal. They took Kayvon and Evan Neal. So it didn't work out great for them. They haven't become superstars, which means we need to nail these picks. So you look at the Giants roster, you think about what they need. Obviously, they need help in the secondary. They need help along the offensive line. They could use another wide receiver. They need help in the front seven. You know, now that interior part, they've got the good edge rushers, but the inside backers and the inside linemen. So not as many holes to fill as there used to be for the Giants. They're pretty set on most of their skill positions and that pass rush, like I mentioned. But at five, it seems like they're between two players, or three. The reporting is they're between three players at five: Caleb Downs, Sonny Styles, and Jeremiah Love. I've been saying this for months, because literally the first report that came out when John Harbaugh came with the Giants was that they were interested in Jeremiah Love. They wanted all these running backs. They were going to sign Kenneth Walker. I think it's all, you know, smoke. It's all smokescreen. It's been smokescreens for weeks for these teams. They've been putting out false information, trying to bait teams into overpaying or not pursuing a certain player. You want to catch people off guard. You want to give yourself any advantage you can in this league. And so the Giants talking about, yeah, we want Jeremiah Love, has just kind of raised the ceiling on him. All of a sudden, you know, now the Titans want him. They pick right before us. And now all of a sudden, the Cardinals are interested in him right before the Giants, or right before the Titans. So it's funny to see it all play out. But I don't think Love goes to the Giants. They have their running backs. Cam Scadaboo is a great player. Tyrone Tracy is one of the best number two running backs in the league. That's a very good combination. You don't need to use that kind of draft capital on a first-round running back when you have so many other needs to fill. So I think that they have to go defense. You have to address that back seven. And I think you either go Caleb Downs or Sonny Styles. I don't think you can go wrong. Both of them can be the captains of your defense for a long time. Both of them are versatile players. Both are good in coverage. Both are good against the run and the pass. If it were up to me, I would take Caleb Downs. I think that he is one of the best safety prospects that we've ever seen. For John Harbaugh, you want somebody who can come in and kind of replicate that Kyle Hamilton role that he had in Baltimore. A safety who can lead your defense, who can play all over the field, by the way. Caleb Downs, they've lined him up at free safety. They've lined him up at strong safety. They've lined him up in the box, in the nickel, in the slot as a corner. They've put him on the edge sometimes, coming off in the blitz. They put him at linebacker. He can play all over the defense, and having that kind of versatility is huge. So that would be my first preference for New York. Sonny Styles, also a really great player, incredibly explosive athlete. I think the deal with him is it's a little more potential-based. He's a very good player, but he wasn't going to be a top-five pick until his combine performance, so that does give me a little bit of pause. However, you could still be thrilled with Styles. I think that he would be a great choice and really restart this Giants team. So we will see how this all plays out. I'm excited for the draft. We'll do a mock draft, our last one, a little later on. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to defend my NBA title prediction, because the Thunder blew out their first-round opponent as well, and I want to talk about it. We will be with you after this.
Did you know that the University of Maryland is one of the 50 fittest colleges in America? Our state-of-the-art Epley Recreation Center, School of Public Health, Ritchie Coliseum, and Cole Fieldhouse have a number of resources that help keep Terps happy, active, and healthy. Join the daily group fitness workouts, request a personal trainer, or own your independence and build your own training plan. Exercise can improve muscle strength and boost your endurance and confidence. Feel better and live longer.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taws Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean On Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
Speech problems. Who's got them? If you're worried about that class presentation, come on down to the Oral Communication Center, or OCC for short. We offer support for students who need help with their communication and public speaking skills. We're based in the Skinner Building in room 2117 from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. But if you need a little help in the afternoon, we're in McKeldin Library room 2111 after 4 p.m. Go to umd.mywconline.net to schedule an appointment, but walk-ins are always welcome. See you there.
All right, welcome back. We've got about 15 minutes left in the first hour of our show here, and I want to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder because I haven't spent a lot of time with them or time talking about them throughout the show this season, but they are my title pick. That's for a reason, and I want to tell you why. Well, first of all, everyone saw their win against Phoenix. I mean, it felt like those teams were playing in different leagues. It was clear that they're outmatched, and Oklahoma City blew them out, as expected. But this season, the Thunder are proving that they are capable of being an all-time great team. Not just title favorites for this year, not just my pick to win it, but one of the best teams of the last 25 years, and we'll talk about that. So, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Oklahoma City Thunder started the season 24-1. They have the 8th highest net ranking ever on the year, their net rating. 8 of the other 9 teams, by the way, went on to win the finals. So let me explain that again. Shai and the Thunder, 8th highest net rating by a team in NBA history. All the other teams in the top 10, except for one, won the title. The only team that didn't was the 2016 Spurs that ran into the 2016 Warriors. So the Thunder are obviously on a great pace. By the way, the Oklahoma City Thunder from last year have the second highest rating of all time. So this is a team now on a 2-year run that has just been thoroughly dominant, not just across the rest of the league, but across league history. This year, they were top 5 in the league. Top 5 in the league, in points, in steals, in rebounds, assists, and blocks. Every single statistic that you could hope for. They led the league in rebounding, by the way, and they have the best defense in the league, according to most metrics. Defensive rating, and all the others. So, there is no reason to believe that this is a fraudulent team. They're the defending champions. They did not get worse. Shai has continued to play at a dominant level, and they are the title favorites and deserve to be. If they're going to have a tough road ahead of them, because they're going to have to play either LeBron, and if they're going to have to either play the Lakers, and if they get the Lakers, Luka might be back, or you're getting the Rockets with KD, who have figured it out. Either way, I do think they'll move on, and then after that, you probably get the Spurs or the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. So this is not going to be an easy playoff run by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that they're just too good and will get it done. So the implications if they do. If Shea and the Thunder, in 2 years, go back-to-back, have Shea win 2 MVPs, 2 Finals MVPs, where does that put them? Well, I just want to think, since 2000, the only other teams that would be on their tier are the other teams that won back-to-back championships. You have Shaq and Kobe's Lakers from the early 2000s. Kobe did it again in the late 2000s, early 2010s. You have Duncan Spurs, who didn't go back-to-back but won 5 titles over the course of, 14 years. You have the Heatles with LeBron and Wade. You have the Warriors with Curry and KD. And now you have the Thunder. They are absolutely one of the 5 best teams since 2000. And there's no real debating that. I think that they would be better than the Kobe Pau Gasol teams. They're better, especially if they win a title. Then Paul Pierce and Ray and Kevin Garnett's Celtics. I mean, just the run that they're on is incredible. And they're only going to continue to get better, because this is still, they were the youngest title team of all time last year. And now if they go back to back, there's no reason to believe that this isn't a budding dynasty that could be dominant in the league for at least the next decade. Going beyond 2000, that's where I think things get tricky for this team all time, because they're not better than Jordan's Bulls or Hakeem's Rockets or, the Showtime Lakers or the Bad Boy Pistons. But since 2000, this is a top 5 team, and they just have to win the title to solidify it. For Shea, it becomes a really interesting conversation, because right now Shea is sitting in the mid-30s of top players of all time. You win an MVP, you win a title, you have multiple All-NBA first teams, all-defense teams. You deserve to be in that spot. If he does it again, wins another title and Finals MVP, then he can start to really climb. So let's play this hypothetical. Once again, if they win it, you have the top 12 all-time, which I'll very quickly run through, but there's a consensus top 12. In no particular order, it's Kareem, Bill Russell, LeBron, Wilt, Michael Jordan, Tim Duncan, Larry Bird, Shaquille O'Neal, Hakeem Olajuwon, Stephen Curry, Kobe Bryant, and Magic Johnson. Those are the 12. Obviously, he's not even touching them. Then you've got the next batch. You've got the guys, some of the older heads. Dr. J, Moses Malone, Oscar Robertson, Jerry West. So that's your 16. Shea's not touching that group. Then you get this next little batch. Isaiah Thomas, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic, Dwayne Wade, and Shea. I think that Shea would put himself in that group, probably towards the back end. But if he does it, you could absolutely have the debate of Shea versus Jokic all time, of Shea versus Giannis all time, Shea versus KD all time. Are these two titles more impressive than what Wade did towards the back end with the Heat? I personally don't think so, but we'll see. Isaiah Thomas, he's probably not passing yet, but Isaiah Thomas, doesn't have 2 Finals MVPs or 2 league MVPs. So it's a very interesting conversation and a huge opportunity now for Shea to start climbing. He's still young. He's not even 28, or he's turning 28. And I want to see how high he can climb. I'm a fan. I hope that the Thunder pull it out. Obviously, they're my prediction. We'll see how the rest of the playoffs go. All right, we're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to wrap up the first hour of our show talking about the A.J. Brown trade projection. It's not official, but we'll see. Back with you after this.
Care to Stop Violence is a campus resource housed in UMD's University Health Center. The CARE office provides free, confidential advocacy and therapy services for survivors of sexual assault, relationship violence, stalking, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their supporters can make an appointment with a trained advocate or call our 24/7 hot crisis line to speak to someone right away. Additionally, we work to empower the campus community to prevent power-based violence through educational presentations, events, and outreach activities. Learn more about our available services and programs by visiting health.umd.edu/care.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
All right, welcome back in. We've got about 5 minutes here left in the first hour of our show, and we're going to talk about all the speculation surrounding A.J. Brown possibly moving to the New England Patriots. Now, the reporting is that New England has been interested in him for quite some time. A.J. Brown has obviously had issues within the locker room, with the front office, with the amount of touches he's been getting, and there have been rumors about him asking out for over a year now. So let's talk about what this would mean, because it's looking like New England is attempting to finalize a trade before June 1st for financial reasons, and the Eagles are engaging in these talks. So, for New England, the trade makes perfect sense. I don't know exactly what the compensation would be. I would imagine it would be a first-round pick, because we've seen Jaylen Waddle go for a first, so I would be shocked if A.J. Brown didn't. Probably even a little bit more. They might add a receiver and adjust it a little bit, but that's around what I'm expecting for the compensation to be. And if it is, it's totally worth it. When you are a Super Bowl contending team and you have the wiggle room financially, getting that superstar is helpful when you're adding him to a roster and trying to elevate what's already a building team, especially when you have a quarterback on a rookie contract. Because this is the moment when you can afford to be going all in on superstars. They haven't paid Drake May yet, so bringing in A.J. Brown for the rest of his contract could be a really helpful option. Not to mention, most of these star quarterbacks get better once they acquire a true number one. We saw what Drake May looked like when he simply acquired Stephon Diggs, who's much older and not as talented as A.J. Brown. So if Drake May now has a receiver who is one of the best after the catch in the league, can do contested catches, one of the best route runners, he's a tactician, great hands. You give Drake May that kind of player, and I think that it could be magic. A.J. Brown had 73 receptions, I believe, last year. He should be up near the hundreds. He should be getting 140 targets a season, like all of these other great number one receivers, because he has the talent to be a top five guy, I think. He used to be, and now he's just not in a position where he's receiving the opportunity to do so. So I think that if New England is able to acquire him, it would be a great idea. For the Eagles, I don't understand trading him, unless the locker room situation is that bad and he's really asked out that adamantly. But otherwise, I don't really understand it. We know that the Eagles' offense runs a certain way. They are a power team. They are a running team. They keep the ball inside. But they were not very creative last year, and they're trying to switch up their game plan. And they're trying to get more out of Jalen Hurts as a passer. And if you have a quarterback who's limited as a passer, with all due respect, because Hurts is a very good quarterback, Super Bowl MVP, all of that. But we know that he's limited when it comes to his throwing ability. Taking away his number one receiver and somebody who has bailed him out in a lot of these situations is not the best idea. One thing that Hurts does really well is throwing the deep ball to A.J. Brown down the sideline, because they understand each other and he knows where to put it. This would change up the Eagles' offense. I trust DeVonta Smith. I think that he could be a number one receiver, and that if the Eagles add the right pieces, that they can still get good production from the passing game without A.J. Brown. But if they are trying to win a Super Bowl, which they are, you don't need to give up a great player when you can afford to keep him. So I still, my gut says he doesn't get traded, even though all the reporting is saying otherwise. If New England acquires him, I think that they'll once again be contenders in the AFC. They'll absolutely be top-end contenders for the one seed. If Philly gives him up, then I think that we start pacing for an Eagles rebuild, because I think that next year will look very similar to this year for Philly. And I think once they start, they keep falling short. You can only take so much of Nick Sirianni. And when they made the Super Bowl, they were able to deal with it. When they won the Super Bowl, they were definitely able to deal with it. But the other 2 years, it's been so almost intolerable, because when you're not winning, all of a sudden the arrogance and, you know, the lack of professionalism is not appreciated. So we'll see how the season goes. I think trading A.J. Brown is the first step towards a bigger rebuild for Philly. But if they keep him, I expect them to just keep trying to run it back, let Howie Roseman acquire talented players that try to fit into their system. All right. That's the first hour of our show. We're going to take a quick break and then reopen the top hour with more. Back with you after this.
Health Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland.